IsraelScene.com. You're listening to IsraelScene.com. I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram. Steve, I'm very excited that today we'll be adding to our Chadesh Yamenu Kadima Jewish Ideas series a segment with Menachem Alexenberg, who I think is one of the most amazing and creative characters around in the Jewish world and in the world in general. You have his bio there. Those who are interested can find it on the website melalexenberg.com. We'll have that in our link section. And why don't you give us a little quickie of the 3 pages of bio we have?
Anyway, this is just a partial list of the things that this man has done. After earning his Bachelor of Science and Master's degree, he began doctoral studies in cognitive psychology at the Firkhoff Graduate School of Psychology of Yeshiva University, which he soon left to study painting at the Art Students League of New York, which is where my son studied for a while. In 1969, his doctoral dissertation, A Unitary Model of Aesthetic Experience in Art and Science, was based on the analysis of interviews of scientists, Nobel laureates, and members of the National Academy of Sciences, and prominent artists who described the creative process to him. Between the years of 59 and 69, he was a science teacher at the Louis Pasteur Junior High School in Little Neck, New York. After completing his doctorate at NYU, Tel Aviv University invited him to join its faculty and work on a science curriculum development project to bridge the gap between immigrant youth from European and Islamic lands. That sounds interesting. We never asked him about that. Columbia University offered him a position as associate professor in art and education in 73. After 4 years of Columbia, he returned to Israel as the founding president of a regional college in the Negev and as associate professor at Bar-Ilan University. He spent the summer of 1980 in Cambridge as a research fellow at MIT Center for Advanced Visual Studies. In 84, he returned to a full-time to MIT after 7 years in the desert. He's moving around a lot. Like all of us. In 87, his digitized homage to Rembrandt, a computer-generated etching, was exhibited in the Artist and Computer Exhibition at Bronx Museum of the Arts and acquired by the Metropolitan Museum of Art for its permanent collection. While heading the art department at Pratt, he acted as a consultant to the art and engineering departments at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, where he developed a new program in computer graphics and taught the first course on digital art and had a solo exhibition at the University Gallery called Computer Angels, 1987. He collaborated with artist Miriam Benjamin in Four Corners of America, the official art project celebrating Miami's centennial. He returned to Israel in 2000, and he accepted a professorship at the College of Judea Samaria in Ariel, where he teaches the courses Space-Time Systems in Nature and Culture to architecture students and Art in Jewish Thought to students in the sciences and engineering. Some of his papers published between the years of 2003 and 6 include Jewish Consciousness and Art of the Digital Age, the Journal of Judaism and Civilization, an interactive dialogue, Talmud and the Net, in the Web of Life issue of Parabola, and his Cyber Angels, Aesthetic Peace Plan for the Middle East exhibition was shown at the Robert Gutman Gallery of the Jewish Museum in Prague in 2004, and his latest book, Future Art in a Digital Age, From Hellenistic to Hebraic Consciousness, Interlect Books, 2006, explores the digital dimensions of art in the digital arena.
I think it'll be very exciting. Number of the projects that you mentioned, he elaborates on in this interview and in our next interviews. This interview, by the way, Steve, is just going to be part one. It'll be followed by part two of this interview with Menachem Alexenberg. And then there's other interviews we've made with him and certainly others we would like to do in the future. He has a number of websites, all of which will be listed in our links page. And this is going to be very exciting. And for people who hear him for the first time, I envy you. It's quite an experience.
And, you know, I just want to add one more thing that I forgot to mention, that he is in the process, I guess, of creating at the a new school of art and multimedia design at Netanya College in Israel, which he's hopefully will be dean when it opens. It's projected for next year. And what's really interesting, it's going to offer BA and MFA programs in which students creatively redefine art at the interdisciplinary interface, where new technologies and scientific inquiry shape cultural values of a Jewish state in the area of globalization. Wow. Whatever in God's name that means. Here we go.
Philosophically, Judaism is to break out of the box, that idea of creative encounter with the world. And, for instance, in the Torah, it quite clearly says that if you have a garment with corners, you have to break open the corners with spirals and branches. The tzitziot, the fringes at the corners, are spirals and branches. Spirals and branches are open-ended systems. They're systems that continually grow. They're the systems of living organisms, and that's what you. But a rectangle's not. You have to break open the rectangle, and if you like trap the Torah in between in a rectangular book, you can't read it on Shabbat at the time of Torah reading. If you don't have it in a scroll, in this endless Mobius strip, that you know where the last letter of the Torah, last word of the Torah is Yisrael. And the first word is Breshit. And so the last letter is Lamed, and the first is Bet. Lamed Bet together is Lev. So the Midrash says, where's the Lev of the Torah? Where the end connects to the beginning, and it continues endlessly. You know, and so that if you don't have it in this endless, non-flowing spiral, this double spiral, in a matter of fact, that parallels the double spiral of the DNA helix in living systems, if you don't have that, then it's a death system, and you can't put the Torah in a rectangle.
Mitzrayim?
Yeah, well, it says that we were slaves, b'malben b'mitzrayim. We were slaves in the brickyard in Egypt, but malben is the word for brickyard, is also the word for rectangle. And so that the rectangle symbolizes slavery, a closed system, a closed form, break open. And a circle, for instance, is also a closed form, and that represents idolatry. The Midrash says that when you had, when we had the Egel HaZahav, it's translated often golden calf, but it could just as well be called the golden circle. Igul is the word circle. And if you really know anything about Egyptian art, you know the Ra, the sun god, you know, that you see in all their sculptures, this round golden circle. And, you know, in fact, it became the halo of in Christian art. And so that's a circle is a closed form. You have to open it up a closed form. And when you open up a closed circle for it to grow endlessly, you have a spiral. And the Jews are called people of the spiral. We're people of the spiral. We're called Am HaSefer. Sefer, they translate as people of the book. Doesn't really mean people in a book, because the word Sefer is in the Torah itself. There weren't any books that we know today. Sefer means spiral. Samech Peresh is spiral. And every ancient language, Akkadian and Aramaic and Phoenician, the Samech Peresh, S-P-R, root, is spiral. You know, and Sefer is spiral. It's a spiral Torah. That's what it means. And so we're people, when I say we're Am HaSefer, they mean we're people of the spiral. And the spiral is this open-ended growth system, and so you have, you know, and so you have this form of the spiral. And it's really interesting because that same SPR root goes into all Western languages as a spiral also. And in English, it's really interesting because SPR, spiral, it's also the root. SPR is the root for spiritual. It's also the root for inspiration. And, you know, and the Latin word to breathe, you know. And so that's the SPR, the Samach Peresh. So I'm the people of inspiration, of spirituality, of the spiral, of open-ended systems.
I understand that all of these ideas are contained in one form or another in one of your closed systems called a book,
right,
which is between two stiff covers. And within it is a great deal of a lot of ideas and a lot of open-ended ideas. And I wanted to ask you, the book is called The Future of Art in a Digital Age. And the subtitle is also important, From Hellenistic to Hebraic Consciousness. So let's hear a little bit about, or a lot about, the difference between Hellenistic Greek consciousness, Greek art, and Hebraic consciousness in Hebraic art.
Well, first let me add that I've opened up the book, and so there's a parallel website where you can experience all the visuals related to it. So you have to read the book along with a website that links to the whole world. So it opens it up, you know. And I, you know, and so, but I think that the Hellenistic or Greek definition of art, which was revived in the Renaissance is the revival of Greek viewpoint is not only different from the Jewish one, but the opposite. And I think that the 20th and art in the West was colored by this Hellenistic definition of the Renaissance until modernism. In the 20th century, I think the 20th century was the century of to break down that definition. The 20th century of modern art broke it down. In the 21st century, I think we need to reconstruct a new definition. And I'm saying that the new definition stems from the two roots of Western civilization, which is Athens and Jerusalem. And I think that the new definition will derive from a Jewish consciousness. And all the new directions in art really are coming out of America. And I think that it's the connection to biblical Christianity that is bringing forth these new art forms that are out of the Jewish roots of Western culture rather than the Hellenistic ones. Well, if we look at the words themselves, it's easy. If you look at the word art, you know, which is in English and French is the same word, art is the root of artificial, artifact. If you look at the word in German and Dutch, Kunst means phony. In Yiddish, a Kunstler is a faker. If you look at my students in Ariel, tell me it's in Russian, it's uskusvo, which in every Western language, it means not true, phony, copy. That's what the word means. And if you look at the Hebrew word, for instance, oman, as an artist, oman aleph mem nun is the same word as amen. It's exactly the same word. What is amen is emet, is truth, right? And if you look, so oman means truth in Hebrew. In the feminine form, it's emunah, which means faith. And as a verb, la amen, like in the Scroll of Esther, la amen is to educate. And so the Hebrew word means truth, faith, and education. The English word means phony, copy, imitation, artificial. Not only is different, the complete opposite. And I think what I like to explain it best with is Midrash Tanchuma of Parshat Tazria. The Midrash Tanchuma, which is one of the oldest Midrashim from over 2,000 years. And in it, Rufus, who was the Roman governor of Israel, came to Rabbi Akiva and he asked him, which is greater and more beautiful, God's creation or man's? And Rabbi Akiva thought a while and he said, man's creation is greater and more beautiful than God's. And the Roman says, how can you say a thing like that? Look at the sky, the sun, the moon, the stars, the whole world. How can you say that man's creation is greater than God's? What are you talking about? And so Rabbi Akiva answers, don't talk about moons and stars and distant things. Sit down and eat with me. That's a Jewish response, you know, barakas, you know. And he brings for the Roman a plate of wheat grains. And he takes for himself a plate of cakes. And the puzzled Roman says, how come I get wheat grains and you get cakes? He said, well, you prefer God's creation. I prefer man's. And I think that the basic difference between a Hellenistic view and a Jewish view is Hellenism viewed nature as the height of creation, and the artist's job is to imitate the creation. In Judaism, the job of the artist is to imitate the creator, not the creation. The dynamic process of the continuing creation, to be the partner of God in Tikkun Olam, that nature is not complete, that the Briah is not complete, and that man is partners of God in the continuing creation. And so it's not imitating the creation, but it's imitating the creator. And so that's the basic idea, the different. I mean, you know, I have the whole book deals with that difference, you know. Well, I think I came to be an artist from being a scientist. And so my original formal education, I'm a biologist. So I deal with systems theory and decided I should be an artist after I had a career as a science. And so my art deals with art, science, technology, and culture, and that's what my book is about, and the relationships between them. And I look at these things, art, science, technology, and culture, in the book through four different lenses, perspectives, I call it. The first perspective is a semiotic perspective. Semiotics is a theory of signs, how you create meaning. In English, sign and significance is the same word. And so how is significance created in art, in science and technology and in culture? How do you create significance? And so based on Charles Peirce's, the father of semiotics at Harvard at the turn of the 19th century, 19th to the 20th century, so I expanded his ideas in these realms and applied them. The next chapter is about morphology, the structures, and we just talked about that, how important it is that you learn the Torah in a spiral instead of in a rectangle, how you break boxes with spirals and branching systems, and how the flowing branches of the fringes at tzitziot are also the roots to the branches of the menorah, the symbol of Judaism. That's this open-ended branching kind of thing. And
but like the star, the Jewish star, so-called, that's very much different, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that I think the Magen David is really the Sri Yantra of Hinduism, right? In the tzitzis, it's like the double knot. There is a thing in there, the double knot. And this has the spirals going, the triangles going up and going down. And like the Indian view, it connects male and female and heaven and earth. And that's, Judaism shares that with that. And so it's been adopted, but it's a rather new symbol. I think the oldest historical examples we have is in, I don't know, the 14th century flag of the Jewish community of Prague. You know, that's it. So it's a really modern symbol in Judaism.
What was an older symbol?
Well, the menorah is a symbol of Judaism. And it's interesting because I was in New York recently and I saw in a bank that had a sign there, Christmas Club, Hanukkah Club. And they had two symbols there. They had a Christmas tree and a Chanukiah. And these are two tree symbols. Right, one's a pine tree, and the other, or evergreen tree, and the other one's an almond tree. You know, according to the Torah, that's based on an almond tree. And look at the difference in form. The Christmas tree is triangle pointing upward, closed system, closed triangle pointing upward. You know, like the cathedrals in Europe, it's pointing up. You know, The menorah is open system, multi branches, you know, multiple directions. Like we say, Es Chayim Hi, the tree of life, L'machazikim Ba, Dracheha Darkei Noam V'Kol Nativoteha Shalom. All of its paths are peace, and all of its ways are pleasant. But it's ways and paths. It's not singular. The Torah is in plural. Like the menorah, it's multiple paths and multiple ways, and so you have this you see the different symbol. Also, if you use the Chabad menorah, which is really triangle going down, right? It's the difference. Modern art, probably the most important book of modern art was a book that Kandinsky wrote at the beginning of modernism. And Kandinsky wrote this book concerning the spiritual and art, which is the classic book on the first serious book on modern art that he wrote in 1911. I mean, it was, you know, and Kandinsky uses his metaphor throughout the book as a triangle going upward. And the triangle going upward, his idea was modern art moves you away from the material, imitating the material world, to a more pure spiritual realm of color and form, and just like music, where you create the music creates its art form by sounds and you know, pitch and changing sounds. The visual art should use colors and forms and not represent anything. Like the music doesn't need to represent any sounds in nature, you know. So the art shouldn't represent any sound, any images in nature, but it should be just about pure color and form. And that was the thesis of modernism that he, you know, wrote about. And he used this metaphor. But Judaism doesn't deny that, and that's why we have a Magen David. But that's not central in Judaism. Central in Judaism is this triangle going down. In other words, we have a triangle going down. It's moving, right? It's taking the spiritual and bringing it into everyday life. It's not getting away from the material world to some spiritual realm above, but it's bringing that spiritual realm into every aspect of our everyday life, which is the basis, the basic thing, even from all different viewpoints. In my book, I deal with the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Hasidism, and that's what he talks about all the time, of how the spirituality you have to discover in every aspect of your life. And Rav Soloveitchik, who writes the exact same thing from the ultimate mitnagid, the opposite of the Hasidism, says exactly the same words as the Rebbe Lubavitch, that where is the spirituality? Where is Kedusha, you know, holiness? And he says, it's in the supermarket, it's in the bus, it's in the street. It's not necessarily in a synagogue. That's not where. It's everywhere, everywhere where you find it, you know. And so that's, you know, so that's an idea that's central. And the electronic age, you know, I had the opportunity to have years of interaction with the Rebbe Lubavitch since he had... From when he had in the early 1960s, when he had a black beard and so on, and
you probably did too.
Yeah, I didn't even have a beard then. And so, but you know, and he talks about the internet and how this can connect people in spiritual connections and not just for business and for leisure. You know that this is a thing, and I. So I deal with how the internet and all these things can create tikkun olam, how you can create, and I did a whole project with blind people and being able to see through their fingers over the internet, you know, and so on.
What would that be like?
Well, I think art sometimes deals with social issues, but it deals with it in you know, it's about these things. I think that to the Jew it needs to be part of the thing. In other words, it actually has to do it. So what we did is we got people who were blind. I interviewed people in New York, in Miami, in Tel Aviv, in Prague. And then I sent questionnaires to institutions for the blind, schools, blind associations, all over the world. And I asked them, what were the four things you would most like to see if you had sight? Right, and it is shocking because I got it from Australia and the Fiji Islands, from Korea, from Lebanon, from the United States, and from all over the world. I got responses. They all said the same thing. You know, I at first thought, well, they probably want to see their mother, their father, their children, their wife. You know, nah, that isn't what they want. They know what they look like. They felt their faces. They want to see things that they can't touch. They want the sky and the clouds and the rainbow. They want to see mountains. They want to see forests. They want to see lakes. That's what they want to see. They want to see things that you can't touch. And they all say the same thing. And it's just unbelievable. I mean, these are such radically different countries, from Africa to the islands in the Pacific to all of Asia, from Japan to Nigeria, say the same thing, you know? And so my idea, well, there's this Roman Guzman, who's a cognitive psychologist in Jerusalem, who developed a mouse that for blind people to be able to see through their fingers, and it has indentations in the mouse, computer mouse, and underneath each finger there's a grid of little pins that go up and down, and as you move the mouse around, the blind person, it draws the picture that's on the computer screen on their fingertips, and they can then read what it says on what the image on the computer screen, and so so I call this thing Cybersight Strudel at Tikkun Olam, you know, so what happens is, you know, this is like walkathons, you know, where they give money to people who walk for a check. So we did. So we thought, we put out on the internet the things that blind people want to see, and if people want to, people should send in the images for blind people to see. And every time they do it, we get a corporation to contribute money to research for the blind. You know, so it's not like a tzedakah. It's a cyber push guy, I call it. You know, that you know, and then those pictures, I digitize them and have to change them into line drawings. I have a program that I could do. And then the blind people all over the world who have access to this mouse here can then be able to see these pictures and so on.
Part two of this interview, which took place in Jerusalem, will be available here at Israel Scene soon.